This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
As we continue to break down the public understanding of the Lindsey Clancy trial, what's going on in it, what was going on in her mind, what was going on in the family and the provider and all of this, the cornucopia that made the Lindsey Clancy case what it is today. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is with us to talk about it, along with Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. The facts in this case are not in dispute. Lindsey Clancy did take the lives of her three children. She admits it. Her defense admits it. Her husband admits it. The question is whether she's a murderer or a casualty, and almost nobody watching this can sit long enough to consider that both might be true. Actually, a lot of you can. A lot of you are very good critical thinkers, and thank God you are here. The purpose of us talking about this is to help enlighten others on this topic. The prosecution says Lindsey sent Patrick out and then checked the map on her phone to see how long he'd be gone on the, you know, the GPS tracking. And they're saying, and this is where the prosecution really hangs their hat, premeditation. Yeah. She looked up how long he was gone. That means it was premeditated. That means she's a monster. That means she's decided to do these horrible things to her children and then jump out a window. Never mind the 13 medications that she was just jacked around on for the last however many months, and every doctor not taking her seriously. The suicide prevention hotline saying, sorry, you're not serious enough for us. Never mind all of that. It's just, you check GPS, you must be this maniacal, horrible human being. The defense says she checked because she was terrified to be alone. Same fact, opposite conclusions. Why is it that people sit with can't sit with the possibility that both readings might be partially right here?
Mm-hmm. I think people like easy stories.
Yeah.
And sometimes when there's been a horrendous case like this, it's emotionally satisfying to look for who do we blame, you know, who's the monster. And people, I think, can sometimes misread it just because they don't understand it. And certainly this was a monstrous thing that happened, but it doesn't fit with who this woman was, you know, a compassionate person, a loving mother, a labor and delivery nurse. She helped people. This was her goal in life. So it just does not fit that this was coming from a rational place. You know, and even if she did do this in a way that, well, I have time now because he's not going to be here, it was driven by these command hallucinations. And so, yes, all of that can be true.
Yeah, and besides, you keep saying, you know, we want someone easy to blame. And we keep pointing out here, the easiest thing to blame, and I know we don't like doing it, is the friggin' system. The healthcare system for mental health is failing. Again, we keep coming across in so many things.
I mean, is that why we see so much? I mean, I don't know. To me on this case, but we're fairly enlightened on mental health in our circle here. Is it because people just really don't get it, and it's much easier to go and say, she's just a bad person and come up with really simple explanations for this, because facing the reality that of how broken our system is, that's an overwhelming thought. Mm-hmm. And if you're not dealing with the system or never have had to deal with the system, you probably don't necessarily care all that much unless it actually affects you. So this is somebody else's problem. They're all complaining about, until then you're like, you get into it and you're like, oh, this is a monstrous, horrific system that doesn't function very well. Mm-hmm. So if you can tell yourself, not a problem, it's this over here, not a problem, this should have happened. I mean, it's the simplicity of not facing something that's broken and dealing with it. Is that really why it seems it seems so easy for people to jump in this room that she's this monster? I mean, her own damn husband, who lost all of his children, is standing behind her. Mm-hmm. Why is Karen in Kentucky's voice? Why does Karen in Kentucky think her opinion is so much more valuable than those who actually were there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people like having a villain. They like an easy narrative. It's emotionally satisfying to them to just be able to say, you know, hang her high because she's a monster.
Yeah.
And that seems to be unfortunately common because people just don't understand the full picture and don't want to put, as you say, they don't want to put the emotional energy into understanding the brokenness of all this. And the other thing that might be happening for some is it's almost a defense mechanism that, well, this is a bad person rather than this is a person with a broken brain. Because if it's a person with a broken brain, maybe all of us could be in that situation. You know, mm-hmm. if not when we're young, when we get dementia, we may have a broken brain. And that's a scary thought. So it's easier to create a monster than to acknowledge,
you know,
that.
And we can create monsters, you know, so you want to just kind of flip it around because people don't want to call the system the monster in this. Yet Luigi Mangione called the system United Healthcare the monster, assassinated a guy, and now he's the hero because he had some sort of mental derangement going on because he decided to kill someone because he thought he's being some social justice warrior. How? So you can demonize a system on that side and stand behind that guy, but on this side is actually legitimately the system failed someone who was seeking help. Yes, according to public record, she sought out help for severe anxiety, insomnia, depression, suicidal ideation, and months leading up to January 23rd. She was so self-aware of all the problems she's having, and the system failed her with 13 medications, with no doctors collaborating on this. Yet, they want to demonize her, not saying she's not culpable for the three lives that are gone, but at the same time, though, that's a system issue.
Very much. Very much. Yeah.
And it's a society that doesn't want to seemingly square up the citizens that are in it, and that not everybody is the person that's looking at it. So everybody looks at the, well, I wouldn't do that, or I had a baby, or my sister had a baby, or somebody had a baby, and they didn't go through it. It was just that, turn that frown upside down.
Right.
Is the type of thinking, and it's just like... Bless your heart. I don't use Southern colloquialisms much because I'm not from the South, but I hear it a lot. Bless your heart. Bless your heart that you live in a world and you have had an existence thus far where you haven't come face to face with the healthcare system or any sort of these crises that allow you to be this viscerally ignorant of other people's struggles. Bless your heart.
And until one of the comments that this is potentially setting a bad precedent, no, it's not. Because for 4 years, Tony and I have covered cases with a lot of really broken brain people, whether it's Lauderdale Bellvallo, whether it's the psychotic mother that wrote the stupid book about killing her husband. All these people, not one other case have we ever said that this was an excuse, except this one. Right. Because all those other people had patterns of nutter behavior.
Yeah.
This one does not have a pattern of nutter behavior. This was a self-aware person that actually was victimized as much as she's a as much as she victimized others by the death of her children. Again, it's no one wins in this one, but no, this is not setting a precedent whatsoever.
Yeah, and the other point, which is very relevant, is that do people fake psychosis after committing a crime? All the time, people can fake psychosis. Forensic interviewers know, and I won't say how we know how to spot someone who's faking. There's a diagnosis for it. It's called malingering, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty easy thing to suss out when somebody is saying, oh yeah, well, I had to, you know, kill so-and-so because I was hearing voices telling me to do it. Okay, that's not going to be an excuse that flies, you know, because we know how to tell who's faking and who's
not. And look at the amount of deep diving they're having to do on this. This isn't just a brush, you know, and even with the Nick Reiner case, you know, they are struggling to even see in that complete broken brain whether he's actually going to reach the bar of this. Mm-hmm. And so the level that you have to go through medically to like you said, Siobhan, to suss out whether this is legitimately going to fall in that category or not, the bar is so high. So it's not become a precedent. Actually, it's the opposite. The precedent has been become there is no mental health issue. That's actually been more the precedent these days.
Where do you think this is going to land with a jury, Siobhan? The judge told the defense that they can't. There's going to be expert witnesses. They wanted to bring in up to like 15 different mothers who've also survived and gone through postpartum psychosis to give the jury some context of what it's actually like from their own perspective, not just kind of the textbook version from the expert witnesses. Judge said, nope, we're not going to hear. That can be a legal argument. We talked about that with Bob, and I do kind of understand why the judge said that from a legal perspective, but damn, that would have been powerful. But without that, with the story being presented as it is, it's seemingly as divisive as this is, as two different groups of society look at this, whether they've been affected by anything in this world, they seem to have a more grounding understanding of this with empathy. People who've never had any touch in this world seem to be very distant from it unless they've educated themselves on it. If you're getting a jury, your peers are probably going to get a pretty solid mix of folks. And to get either side to go either direction, I think, is going to be a stiff challenge, especially with 18 jurors. Do you think we actually get a verdict here other than a hung jury once this is all said and done?
Oh, my God. I sure hope so. I sure hope so that there are good people on the jury who are capable of understanding this. I hope so. And it would be wonderful if they had even allowed a half a dozen women, even three women who have experienced, you know, postpartum psychosis to testify what was this really like for them, just to give the jury more context. I think that would be so powerful. And it may legally not be something that can happen, but I think ethically and morally it should happen.
How do you do that, though? Because, look, I mean, when we talk about this, you get folks, like I said, that seem to understand it or at least be open to it and hearing it. And the ones that don't are just... They're the same type that can easily just walk away from facts and go, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do with that? What do you do with the crowd that's like, I don't believe it. It didn't happen to me. I don't believe it. Because there's a lot of that. I mean,
there is a lot of that.
Is there any changing that? Is there any educating that? You know, or is it just like, this is why if I were to put money on it right now, I would go with hung jury. And we haven't even heard opening statements yet.
Mm-hmm. It's horrible. It all depends on who you get on the jury. And I'm sure her defense is going to do everything that they're allowed to do. And I mean, there's so much scientific, you know, because behavioral science is a science. There's so much science that can be presented about how this is a real thing and how it works and how it affects people. And it's just tragic if she gets...
It's tragic, and hopefully this tragedy can lead us to more education. I think this trial is going to be very educational for a lot of people because, you know, to your point as well, unless you have context, anything in life is hard to understand without context. Unless you have a personal rep yourself or someone close to you with something that is so tragic and so out of the norm, because this is a major behavior norm. People don't do this every day. And one or two in 2,000 even have this potential to have it pop up. It is so far out of the norm that having more people have context, bringing the awareness, hopefully the healthcare industry is watching it when they're talking about how they're going to have coverage and everything too. Because I think there's a lot of things that are on trial here that are being brought to light.
Yeah. And you know, I've heard the word justice thrown around. Where's the justice for the kids? Yeah. If we want to look at what would justice be in this case, it's, can we come out of this learning some lessons about improving postpartum care, recognize psychosis, and require that when people are seeking help, that they get help and get decent treatment?
What a thought. You mean justice isn't locking up away a woman who was, you know, bruised and battered by the system and then blamed for it, drugging her 50 ways to Tuesday and then having a horrible outcome? That's not justice. Throwing away the key on that. Yeah. You mean something helpful, something productive? Wow. What a concept. Yeah. 1,000% correct.
And she's incarcerated anyway, whether she's in a psych ward or in the jail system, either way, she's paralyzed from the waist down, and she's in the system. It's not like she's walking free. I can't imagine that there's any situation that's going to come up that's going to have her walk free.
I don't see the vitriol in this, and I don't understand why this is. I mean, she's already said lock me away in a mental health facility. That's what I want.
I mean, either way, we're cool. Yeah, the argument is this. Do you want her locked away in the regular prison system with population, or do you want her locked away where she's going to get mental help? It's really the only thing that's going on trial at the core of what the result at the end of the day is, because at the end of the day, you still have three little babies that were gone, a family that's missing them, a husband that's been devastated, and she's saying, I did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can't fix stupid, though. I think that's the other lesson here at the end of the day when it comes to understanding a case like this.
But hopefully we can fix stupid. We're trying to fix stupid.
We're
the
trying to fix
stupid.
It, but sometimes you just can't. But hopefully you pick something up out of this and went, oh, okay, I'm going to think about that a little bit differently. If we did that, good. Good. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. Siobhan's latest book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Go check it out. Audiobook also available. Highly, highly recommended. Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me. It's available also wherever you get books and on Amazon and audiobook. Leave a review there. Also, greatly appreciated. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Be sure to press subscribe and give us your thoughts. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.